Okay, this is Tina Young, conducting an interview with Annette Simpkins, maiden name Vartanian, at her home in her kitchen on 3017 Wayne Avenue in Granite City, Illinois. It's the 28th of November, 26th of November. I'm losing the month. It's the 26th of November, 2001. This is tape one, side one. Let me situate this. And could you please state and spell your name for the tape, please?
Okay, Annette Simpkins, S-I-M-P-K-I-N-S.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, the first question I'm going to ask is, what is your connection to Lincoln Place?
I was born and raised down there. My parents came over here from the old country, and I'm a first generation.
First generation. And how long did you personally live down there?
Till I was 20 years old and got married, and then I moved back when my husband went overseas for another year and a half, and then we moved out. My parents moved out in 53.
Oh, so your parents moved out of the neighborhood as well
also,
then?
Also, yes.
Okay, where exactly from Armenia? What a particular village name or?
Yeah, Betlis, B-E-T-L-I-S, I think, or something very similar to that. Both my parents are from the same little town, I guess you could say, province or whatever they call them.
Were they married before they came over?
No. My father came over here in 1905, and my mother came over in 1908. And my mother was 12 years old when she came over, and they got married, I guess, immediately. I don't know, truthfully speaking. And she was very young.
Very young.
Mm-hmm. My dad was several years older than her.
Now, you mentioned the name of the village. There was a coffee shop down there with a very similar name. Was it named after that village, or
it was called
a Beetle or Beetle Coffee House, or maybe that's the one in Madison. But I heard someone say that a lot of times the coffee houses were named after
it
the
could
village.
Be. We had a couple down there, but I don't remember the names of them.
And then you live right on Needring House,
yes.
the main little strip
main
there.
Main street. When I was born, and it was Pacific Avenue, mm-hmm. And then they changed it to Needring House. Oh, and I think before World War II started.
World War II. Because mm-hmm. A couple people have mentioned to me that one of the reasons they changed the name was after the basketball team won the championship, and then some people say, no, it was before.
It was right around the same time, but exactly I don't know when. And in fact, I didn't know this until when we had this first meeting, somebody mentioned it. And they brought up the championship, so I'm sure something had to do with that, I think. I'm not sure.
You were just a little bitty thing at the time, but Miss Prather.
Prather.
Prather. I always want to call her Prather because I went to school with a Prather.
Yeah. And Prather.
Prather. She died in 1936, so you were just a little bitty. Do you remember her?
I remember her, but faintly, but I remember the name because she was always such a dominant being in that community.
Yeah, she sounded like she had a lot of influence.
She was good for the people down there. She helped them a lot, yeah.
Almost like a motherly
children.
Kind of figure.
Yeah.
Strong mm-hmm. matriarch, kind of. What kind of businesses do you remember down there when you were a kid?
What kind of businesses? Well, I know there was one or two restaurants throughout the time. There were taverns, of course. There was a pool hall. There were coffee houses, ice cream parlor. I'm trying to think. Cleaners, dry cleaners. There used to be a fabric store right on Needring House. Trying to think of Shepherd's Sheets, I think. was the name of the Chefesheet. Maybe I could be wrong. I'm trying to think what else there was down there. Church, Baptist church while I was growing up, a little mission, missionary-like. I guess that's it. America's Steel Foundries, Commonwealth, they were surrounding us like, you know. And then they built the depot.
Did the depot help out? I mean, as far as employment or anything?
Oh, yes. It helped out in every aspect, I guess. Employment, financially, and every which way. It kind of put the little town on the map, you know. Mm-hmm. Before that, nobody knew much about Granite City, but after the depot came, it was a big help.
I noticed on your bio sheet that you filled out, you worked down there?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I started there in 49, and it was really strange. I think I worked there less than a year, and they moved our whole office over to St. Louis. And I thought, God, I used to be able to walk to work. I was five blocks from the entrance to the depot, and here I'm going to have to go to St. Louis to go to work. I was very aggravated with that, and I come to realize much later that the office I was with was really not part of the depot. It was actually from Washington, D.C., and it was just renting, more or less, a space down there. And then they got bigger, and they moved over to St. Louis. And it stayed there, and it changed names 100 times, and location, too.
Now, when you were a kid hanging out in the neighborhood, did you was it a part of your life to know, okay, these are Armenians and these over here are Macedonians, and you know, how was it growing up in a neighborhood that was kind of quite diverse? It sounds like
we had a mixture of everything down there, I think, and we just grew up knowing who they were. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, those are Macedonians there, or those are Mexicans.
Right.
Or, we grew up knowing what they were. How? I don't know. We just grew up knowing it. And I think we had a little bit of almost every nationality there was down there. Well, you know, I mean, I know we had a Greek family, we had some Germans, and we had a couple of Polish people, and we had Hungarians, and we had Macedonians, and we had Bulgarians, and we had Armenians, Mexicans. There may have been a few others too that I'm not aware of, you know, but those were the major ones. There were a lot of them too.
Did you now? Did your dad work at one of the steel mills down there? Is that what his job was, or?
When I was growing up and I was a child, my father was a food peddler. He had a truck. Years ago, he had a truck with a horse. Then later on, he had a truck. You know what I mean? Or a wagon with a horse. Then he had a truck. And he used to go up and down streets selling fruit and vegetables. We went all over Granite City because I used to have to go with him. And he also worked at the Commonwealth. And we also had a tavern. But my father also opened the first theater in Granite City, right down in Lincoln Place, like Caddy Corner from American Steel. There's nothing there now, it's an empty lot. But there used to be a three-story building there. And he had his theater there. My father used to also have, he'd direct plays, Armenian plays. My father ventured into a lot of things, I guess. Never made any money at it, but he tried everything out, you know.
A for effort.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that must have been neat, having the movie theater right
in
the neighborhood.
Well, that was before my time.
Oh, really?
That was before my time, yeah. I remember my father, we had pictures when I was a kid. They were downstairs in the basement, and all four of my sisters, it was like a play he had produced. And all four of my sisters were in this play, along with others, and they had uniforms on like they were soldiers. And then there was another one, and I can't remember what it was. I think one was of my sister, oldest sister, playing a violin, and another one was of her doing a rumba type dance. And I don't know what happened to those pictures. I think my older sister finally threw them out. I was very disappointed when I went looking for them, and I couldn't find them.
It's hard to keep track of that kind of stuff. It is.
She didn't want to keep all that old stuff, you know. She didn't like it, so. Too bad.
Yeah, I'm just the opposite. I like to
love
that stuff.
Some of that stuff, I mean, I know she got rid of a lot of my mother's old dishes and things like that that she didn't want anymore, but I'm sorry, I would have loved to have had them, you know. I've got a few pieces, but not many.
They're heirlooms, so things to pass down.
Yeah.
Now, did you grow up, it seemed like everybody seems to kept quite a bit of the language as far as you grew up speaking Armenian and speaking that in the home? And
yes.
Did you pass that down to your kids then to speak Armenian? Or?
Unfortunately, I didn't. I wish now I would have, and my kids wish I would have. But my husband at the time didn't think it would be wise trying to teach them two languages, you know, the American and Armenian. So I unfortunately listened to him and didn't teach them. And I'm very, very sorry for it. Mm-hmm. Really am. Yep.
And I've been asking everybody this, basically just, was there anything in particular that your parents passed down to you as far as, I mean, not necessarily objects, but as far as the idea of what your culture meant? Okay, we're back. No, what I was asking was there any thing in particular about your heritage that your parents expressed to you that was important? Or wanted to teach you or tell you about your heritage as far as being Armenian and what that might mean? Or was it just...
It was just... it was just accepted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My father insisted we speak Armenian in the home. And everything was traditional Armenian, our food and... you know, things like that, but my father only had his mother and one brother and one sister, and the mother died before I think I was born, so I didn't learn anything from them. My aunt moved to California. I met her once in my life, and I was a child when I did, about 8-10 years old. Don't remember much about her. My uncle, I don't remember him at all. He moved away when I was very little. They went to New York. So I was like one on each coast and one in the middle. And I never grew up with family. All my sisters were, one was 20 years older than me, and the youngest was 14 years older than me. So I didn't even grow up surrounded with my sisters because they were older than me.
Your dad's first wife then, I would imagine?
No, he only had one wife.
Oh.
My mother.
Boy, she spaced him then.
No, I think she had several miscarriages in between myself and the sister above me. But, like, on them, I think it's almost like every 2 years. And then she had several miscarriages, and then I came along, another girl.
So it was all girls.
All girls. Big disappointment, I'm sure.
Ah.
Yeah, nobody to carry on the name.
It's too bad it's so emphasized.
Yeah.
So, food seems to be a big...
Oh, yes, we love our food.
Yeah, I'm hearing, you know, that's a big part of identity. You know, this is what we make. What was your favorite types of dishes?
It's hard to say I like them all.
Yeah, me too.
One of our traditions, of course, like a Sunday meal, always consisted of chicken and pilaf, which is the rice dish, and salad. I mean, and if you got fresh bread at the bakery, Chris's Bakery, you know, that was your meal. But we make stuffed peppers, we make stuffed cabbages, we make a round ball that has its meat and it has a filling in it of parsley and onions and ground up meat real fine and everything. It's all very tasty. We don't make, we have pastries, but one of them is paklava, which of course the Greeks make and the Syrians and the Lebanese, they all make it and they call it baklava with a B. And then we make a bedeg, which is the phyllo dough with the cheese filling, or the spinach and cheese filling, which is also very good. In fact, I have some for you. And gata, which is like a bread. It has the consistency, it's a soft bread, and we put a butter filling in it. And those are our three main desserts, really. And out of all of them, the bread type one is my very favorite. Mm-hmm. I think you'll find most people say it is their favorite. And then the bedeg and paklava comes last. Just a little sweet.
Yeah, that paklava is.
Yeah. My mother was a very good cook. She seasoned her food very well. You didn't have to go long and season with a lot of extra salt and pepper later, you know.
Now going to, let's say, the you went to Washington School,
yes.
And then the junior highs and the high
mm-hmm.
school. Because you were a part of Lincoln Place, you know, part of this very specific neighborhood.
We were shunned.
Really? Because that's kind
yes.
of what I'm hearing.
Yes, we were. Not so much at Washington School. And not even too bad at junior high, Central School. But when we got to high school is when we felt the brunt of it. And it was bad. It really and truly was. They made you feel like an outsider. And one or two of them got along okay because, like Andy Phillips, who was a big basketball player, or Andrew Hagopian, you know, or some of them that... I don't know. They were noted for a sport of some kind. And they were more or less accepted. But if you didn't have any of those qualifications, you know, you were shunned. And I remember our gym teacher. She was a horrible woman. And she really she picked on us, people from Lincoln Place, a lot.
And just... makes no sense why people would do that.
No,
you know?
But she was bad. She was a bad person, a mean person. She really was. I could give her name, but it wouldn't do any good, you know.
I've had one or two teachers in my time. Now, were those guys, Phillips, that sounds familiar. Was he
Andy
on
Phillips.
That basketball team?
Yeah, he was a star. That's the one they had something a couple of weeks ago where they made a memorial out here and they donated, I think, in his name, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
Yeah. Andy Phillips.
How big of a part did the community center play in the neighborhood? Was that like the focal point of
that
community?
That was it, yes. Everybody congregated there. Your parents would send you to the community center. You learned from Miss Prather and the others that came along after her. We went there every summer. We had Bible school. They taught us the Bible. They taught the girls how to embroider and how to do different things. They taught the boys how to do things. They even had women that came in, and or men or whatever, and taught you, if you want to learn how to play the piano, they gave you lessons and all that. Of course, I never could grasp, but I tried, but I couldn't grasp it. Okay, Like I said, unfortunately, I never learned how to play the piano, but a lot of them did. They benefited a lot. And I remember every Sunday we had Sunday school. And we'd all go there at the clubhouse, and there were two women that came down. One would lead us in singing and devotional, and the other one played the piano. And they came every Sunday. And that was our only means of church, unless, I guess, I think some of the Catholics walked downtown and went to a Catholic church. But the rest of us, all of us, went to the Sunday school on Sunday mornings.
So we didn't have either. They didn't have a specific Armenian church down there at the
Not
time?
Not at that time. You know, we were there wintertime and summertime. I mean, wintertime we played basketball. We did all kind of sports on the inside, whatever it was. I can't remember now, but we did everything. We'd sew, we'd embroider, we just played. We played school. We played, you know, this or that. We walked right on the chalkboard. Summertime, we played softball, you know, and baseball, and they had swings. And I don't know, we just occupied ourselves at the clubhouse. There was always something going on where you could do something.
It's good for the kids.
It was. It was wonderful.
A lot of kids have nowhere to go and nothing to do these days, or they seem like they don't.
I know it's still there, and it's run by the, I think the YMCA or the park board. Maybe the park board. But it doesn't have the activities it did when we were younger. There was always somebody there to help you, to do something for you, to help you find something to do. I could even remember when I was a teenager, they'd have movies on Saturday night. They'd bring movies in, and everybody'd sit around on the floor or on chairs and watch a movie. Even the parents would come. Hmm. Yeah.
What kind of role did the Baptist mission play in that neighborhood?
Baptist mission kind of took over when the Sunday school stopped at on Sundays at the clubhouse. We call it the clubhouse, community center. Miss Lambert was an influence on all the young children at that time. She was a very strong-willed woman. She had a heart of gold. She was a go-getter, and she never gave up. She kept after you and after you and after you. And again, all of us went to it. It didn't make any difference if you were Mexican, Armenian, Macedonian, Hungarian. We all went.
I'm kind of at a loss as why they, I don't understand why there would have been why there was a Baptist mission there. I mean, you know.
I don't know.
Because it just kind of struck me as odd. I don't know. It sounded like it was good, but for the neighborhood, but I was thinking.
I think it's because we had nothing down there at the time. Mm. There was no kind of church or Sunday school or anything going on. And she came in. I mean, she had the work cut out for her. Because it was hard to get a lot of those people to go. But we went. And our parents encouraged us to go, most of us, you know. Even the Catholics went. I remember a lot of the Mexicans, they're all Catholic, you know, they would go. We all did. She was she gave you a lot of inspiration. She was a good woman. She really was.
Her name is Miss Lambert?
Lambert.
Lambert.
Okay. Uh-huh. Helen Lambert. Her nephew at one time sold real estate here in town. In fact, that's who I bought my house off of. He was the realtor. Can't remember his first name, though. But I remember hers. It's a sign of old age.
I'm trying to phrase my question here. Silences aren't bad. Did your parents ever tell you any particular stories or anything about how that when they came over here or how they came over here or anything and, you know, anything that struck them? Anything they passed down? Any funny little stories about?
No, I know, I think my father went to England first and then he came over here. And most of them landed in, I guess, around Providence or somewhere. Why he stayed in this part of the country is beyond me, except there was a community here with foreign people and the steel mill. That's the only thing I could figure out. But I could I can't remember. He never talked much about it. I know one time he went to California with the intention of looking around to move out there, and he come back and we never did move. We were all very disappointed. No, nothing was said. I do remember my mother talking about coming over here. Her parents let her come over here because they thought she would have a better life over here. And she came from a not wealthy family, but a fairly wealthy, I guess you could say. Her brothers were all educated and all, so my mother was intelligent, but she never got to finish school, you know. And I remember her saying how her mother had known what a hard life she was going to have over here. She would never send her over here, you know. And she said her brothers were all blonde, blue-eyed, and I remember that. That's one of the things I remember her telling me. But my mother, when she came over here, she didn't know how to do anything. And she ended up being a fantastic cook. She made clothes for all of her children, all of her girls, handmade their dresses. Smocked them in those days, washed clothes by hand, I guess, till they ended up with the washing machine, cooked with a wood stove and all that, you know. Her life was not easy. It was very hard.
You know, housework back in those days was
terrible.
I couldn't do it. I just set a match to it and walk away.
That's one reason I swore I would never have a home that had Venetia blinds. Because we had them when I was growing up, and I hated them because I had to clean them. And I swore I would never have Venetian blinds. I'd put a sheet over my window before I'd get another set of Venetian blinds. No, I can't remember. My parents, I guess you could say they were pretty close-mouthed. They didn't have too much to say.
Now,
my sisters knew more than I did. But see, my sisters were all close. They were closer then. When I come along, I was like an outsider. So they had discussed everything through the years, and I was left out. And a lot of the things I have learned have come from my sisters. Hearing them talk about it through maybe the last 20 years or so, you know. When I was growing up, I used to go with my father every day on his truck to peddle vegetables and fruit. And we'd come home at noon for lunch, and then we'd leave again. And I used to cry because all my friends were out playing at the clubhouse, and here I was having to go with my father selling fruits and vegetables. I didn't find it degrading. I was upset because I couldn't play. And one day I remember, as soon as we came home, I took off for the clubhouse. Well, when my dad got through eating lunch and he couldn't find me, he came up to the clubhouse, up through the alley, of course, and spanked me, and off we went down the road, you know, through the alley. And I'm crying, and he says, "If you cry, I'm going to hit you." And the more he said that, the more I cried. And but he never hit me again. But he threatened me. And my father's threats were worse than his actual bite, I guess you could say. My father was a strong-willed man. He never had to repeat anything twice. He said it once, the second time he looked at you, and that was it. Another one was, I was a tiny baby when this happened, but my oldest sister, I remember her talking about it. During the Depression, my father was a bootlegger, and he made liquor in the basement, but you had to go through the living room, push the carpet bag, open the trap door, and go down into this one area of the basement. Now, if you went in from the outside and went down in the basement, you didn't know there was another room behind that back wall. But anyway, he was, of course, I was young and I didn't know this. He was a bootlegger. And one day my sister worked at the bank in Granite City, Grand City Trust and Savings Bank. And she was walking home from work, and she saw all this crowd of people in front of our house. And she saw that it was the FBI. So she said, she pretended she didn't even know. She just kept right on walking, you know. But they were there arresting my father for bootlegging. But I'd stop and think about it now, you know. I think, my God, what would we have done if it was in this day and age, you know? And another incident was when my father, this is during World War II, my father was going to the city hall to, you know, I want to say something. In those days, you did whatever you did to survive and to take care of your family. And people always wanted liquor, I guess. I don't know. So my father made it and sold it.
Oh, there were so many bootleggers in this country, yeah. Because, you know, the FBI were drinking it too.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, my father was going to go up to the city hall to get his citizenship papers. And he thought it would be a good idea if I went with him and spoke up for him. So I went with him. I was, 12, 13 years old. And the judge asked me a few questions, and he says, what do you speak at home? And I said, oh, my father don't let us speak anything but Armenian. Well, needless to say, my father didn't get his citizenship papers, and he chased me all the way home, you know, and I'm crying, and, well, I wasn't crying, but I was frightened because he was so angry. And I practically ran from the city hall. This is the old city hall on Niedring House. Well, it's still there. What am I saying, the old one? It's still there. All the way down into Lincoln Place. And that night at supper, when my sisters found out what had happened, they were hysterical. They were laughing. And when we all sat down to supper, they were trying to tease with my father. And he wasn't an easy man to tease with. And when he thought about it, he glared at me, and he started to get up, and I remember I jumped up out of my chair and ran out of the room again. I was scared to death of my father. He was a very domineering man.
Well, he had been in the country since what,
1905.
1905, and did he ever get his citizenship papers?
Oh, yeah, he got it.
Yeah,
he got it a few years later. But it was just the idea, you know. He says, why would you say something like that? Well, the man asked me.
It's like, Dad, you should have warned me if you wanted me to lie.
Yeah, really.
I noticed your mom's name. First name. How do you pronounce that?
Beidzot.
Beidzot.
Uh-huh. Beidzot.
And then your father's is?
Eranos.
Eranos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you lived there until you were married.
Yeah.
You were talking about. And where did you meet your husband?
He was stationed at the depot. Let me say, my family, I don't know when they moved to the house on Needring House, but before that, they lived on a house on Maple Street behind Louis Market. It used to be Kirchhoff's Market, then it was Louis. But of course, this was before I was born. And I remember we must have lived, my family must have lived on the lower level. And I think my uncle and his son lived, and maybe his wife, on the floor above us. But see, I don't remember them. None of them. Now, what'd you ask me?
Oh, I was wondering where you had met your husband.
Oh,
I was going to maybe
right.
even guess it.
He was stationed out the depot, and I worked out there. And my dad had a tavern at the time, and I'd help out once in a while in the evening. And he came in, and that's where I met him. Unfortunately.
Oh, well.
Yeah. He's from West Virginia. He's still around the area. He lives in Belleville now. Well, in fact, he just moved to Swansea, and the children have always stayed in touch with him.
Now, a lot of people grew up speaking the language. Do you know how to write the language as well?
No. I never learned how to read or write. I could speak it, and I'm not the best, far from it, but I do speak it. And I think the reason is that when my sisters were younger, they were forced to learn how to read and write and speak. They all spoke beautifully. I think my older sister may have remembered how to read and write, but probably passed through the years. But when I came along, my father had kind of eased up a little bit, and he wasn't quite as stern as he was with them. And we, like I said, we had to speak it, and I went to Armenia school several times, but I never, the teachers would get, I guess they got exasperated or whatever, and they wouldn't last long, you know, so, because they were donating their time and everything.
Well, Mel Bogosian had mentioned the Armenian school. Was that, extra outside of your regular schoolwork, and that was just to reinforce
it. They'd have it in the evenings, and different ones would teach, and it'd last for a couple of months or better, and then they'd stop, you know, and then somebody else would start it up again. And in fact, we've got it going on at our church now, trying to get the younger kids, because most of the fellas and girls are married to odars, as we call them. I don't know if you've heard that word or not, odars. That means other than Armenians, foreigner-like, you know. We call them a foreigner, and yet we're, to the Armenians, that's what it is. Anyway, they have children, and most of them want their children to learn the language. So they do have Armenian school now. They've had it for the last few years. Sometimes they get good participation, other times they don't. It's hard to find somebody in the younger group that can really read and write and speak Armenian. There are a few that are really, really good at it, but it's hard to get.
It takes a lot of commitment.
It does, and you can't. And you, the kids have to really be interested. If they're not interested, then it's no good.
Yeah, this is true. Have you ever been to Armenia? Have you ever traveled there? So
no.
A lot of people have traveled.
Yeah, I spent 7 years in Germany working, but I traveled all over. I never went to Armenia. They had no, I don't know if I could have even gone. I don't know if there were any tours. It was a communistic country at the time. Although they did have a few tours to Russia, but that was up like to Moscow, you know. So, and Armenia is pretty far from there. We had tours to Turkey. In fact, I took a tour to Turkey and to Istanbul, and Armenia is north of there. So, north, I'm trying to think, Armenia's here, so that would be, north, I guess, would be right. I'm trying to think, it was northwest or northeast, but I don't, it doesn't really make that much difference. No, I didn't, but I had some relatives that come down to visit us. Oh, back in the late 60s and early 70s, my mother's brother, the one she just found out was still alive, I guess, after the genocide, he finally got in touch with her. Somebody told her he had put an ad in one of the Armenian papers, and they corresponded.
Because she got out of the country before that happened.
Right.
Did she lose a lot of her family then?
She lost all of them, probably, except the one brother. And she never got to see him again, even though she wanted to. But his son, who's a cancer, he runs a cancer clinic in Moscow. He came to the States, he and his wife. They traveled all over visiting different relatives of, not so much my cousins as his wife's relatives. But they stopped here and they spent a week or so here. And then later on, his wife came back for another visit.
Are you involved in the like the Armenian Relief Society? Is that what it's called, Armenian Relief Society?
No.
Because I didn't know what kind of work they did over there. I didn't know.
Now Bogosian belongs to a lot of them do. And I was... Through the years, I was never involved with this church. I mean, I rarely went to church. And I used to go to the church in Belleville, or East St. Louis, wherever it was. And then I went to Germany. When I come back, I decide I want to join the church. So I joined this one because it's close to me, rather than going over there. And I've become very active in it, but I've never joined any of the organizations. I've had bad experiences with joining groups of women. And there's too much...
Amen to that one.
too much politicking going on and too much hassling over stupid things. So what I've always told them is, I'll help you any way I can, but I just don't want to belong to the organization. They have a ladies' guild, and they have the ARF, Armenian Relief Society, I guess is what it is, which is like the Red Cross, I guess you could say. And whenever they have a function, I always bake or whatever and donate, but I won't join.
Yeah, it tests your patience.
Well, a lot of it is political, and I try to stay out of the political end of it. I've told them all that from the very beginning. There's too much politics, and I don't want to be involved in that part of it.
We have to agree with
that. Yeah, it can get bad.
Well, then you lose sight of what you're actually trying to do, and it becomes unpleasant instead of, you know, what it's set up to do.
Right.
Sure, I have enough here. Let me stop this real quick.